And a beautiful Arizona, good morning to you all. Welcome to Rosie on the House, your Saturday morning, your Arizona Saturday morning tradition for 28 years. We're in the outdoor living hour. We have John J. Harper of Harper's Nursery. We got Rosie over here. Jennifer's taking your calls at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. And we can monitor your text at 411-923. Anything and everything outdoor that lives, grows, breathes, that you need to mow, cut, water, or sometimes just burn down is what we talk about in this hour. And I don't know. I haven't seen the forecast for the entire state, but it's definitely an overcast from where we're sitting.
Little high, thin clouds, I think. Still supposed to be 73 today and partly sunny. So
have
great
you
day to work in the garden.
Your sprinklers back on
no.
from 2 weeks ago?
Nope. I haven't even watered pots. My pots still don't need watered. But I would be checking pots if you have things in containers. It's been a couple of weeks, mid-70s. Some of the smaller containers might be starting to dry out. Lawn still doesn't need watered. Mine looks great. You know, one little trick on your lawn, if you walk across it and your footprints stay in it a long time, it's probably getting a little dry.
Oh.
In the grass,
yeah.
not a footprint in the soil.
No, in the grass. So if you walk on the grass and you know how you leave a footprint, if they bounce right back or come back relatively quickly, it's got plenty of moisture in it. If you walk in it and they stay, you know, those depressions from your feet stay there, just stay there, then it's probably gotten a little dry and needs a drink of water.
Speaking of footprints, did you see in a road construction project north of Tucson, they found footprints 2,000 years old?
I did see that. Yeah. Yeah.
I printed the article off to bring it in. I didn't know if we were going to get to it, and we didn't even set you up for this.
I saw a picture of somebody posted a picture. Oh, Terry Michael. Terry Michael, our retired county extension agent, posted a picture of the footprint.
And it's really interesting to read the article about how it was obviously a very muddy day when these people were out farming, and that's what they believe was happening, and you could tell where they had walked through the field, and they even had baby footprints from the toddler playing around. And shortly after that, a flood had come through, and it poured all this sand on top of their crop and has just preserved it for what they think between 2,500 and 3,000 years ago south of Tucson. Can you imagine farming in the desert 3,000 years ago without a John Deere? or a hoe with a metal head?
Well, it's what you did all day, every day, 365 days of the year. You survived by hunting or farming. That was your existence. You didn't go to the office from 8 to 5 on Monday through Friday and garden on the weekend. You know, that was just the deal. And they did it. They did it all over the valley. You know, they're apparently, you know, I shouldn't even quote it, but the population they think that lived in the Salt River Valley, you know,
when you tour the Pueblo Grande Museum right there at 44th and Washington, they state as many as 300 to 500,000 from basically Litchfield Park to Gila Bend.
Right. So, you know, 500,000 people living here in, you know, what we guess consider pretty
incredible.
Historic. Yeah, that's a lot of folks that were, you know, with water and sunshine and relatively good weather most of the year, and you know, it was farmable flat ground, and you know, but that's what you did all day. You didn't take a break. There were no days off.
no rest. And nowadays they get the power outage and they worry, and you know, and people freak out for 2 hours without electricity.
What are we going to do without our air conditioner?
A hardier
yeah.
People.
Well, you didn't have anything to compare it to, so I guess it's, you know, it's amazing what you can do. So
they're probably like, man, those knuckleheads in Yuma, they what are they doing living over there?
Yeah, because there's a lot of water there. That thing called a river runs right through it, right? So what are we going to do in the garden today? We got, you know, it's kind of mid-January. We're pruning roses. We're pruning fruit trees. We're planting fruit trees and deciduous shade trees. We're planting winter vegetable plants. you know, we're tuning up maybe a flower bed here and there with maybe we need to add a little color like a geranium or a pansy or some alyssum just to kind of get things back in tune. If a lot of people, you know, with those ornamental sweet potatoes, the purple and the green vining ornamental things in pots, and those have all frozen. So, you know, a lot of people left them through the fall because they look good. So you may need to kind of tweak those pots and containers and beds a little bit. Just cut that stuff back and then plant what we do. We've got these big pots out in front of the nursery, big whiskey barrels. And we just cut that stuff back right to the ground and then plant our stuff in and around it. And then when it starts warming up, that stuff starts growing back. And about the time the geraniums are pooping out for the summer, that stuff's gotten big again and just fills it right back up. So there's, you know, there's lots of things, feeding winter lawns, putting on pre-emergent. A lot of people are afraid they're too late. Well, you might be too late relative to the weeds that have already sprouted, but it's not too late for the weeds that are going to sprout when we start getting some warmer weather with all the moisture that's in the ground. And, you know, more than likely more rain to come. So get it on, you know, as soon as you can. And it's never too late to apply pre-emergent. It always works for a certain period of time after you apply it. So if you can get in a cycle of doing it two or three times a year, then you always have, you know, relatively weed-free gardens and landscape.
And for the consumer grade, it's not like you can purchase these liquid commercial products you see them using on roadsides or people that have chemical licenses. It's usually a granular application.
I think those are the easiest for homeowners to use. The granular stuff, put it in a little whirly bird or spreader, and you know, you got to go back and you do have to water it in. If you don't get rain within, you know, a few days, you should water it in. That material laying on top of the ground with ultraviolet light hitting it will, you know, reduce its effectiveness if it lays there too long. So,
and if it's just open desert, how do you know you've watered it in enough?
Well, you know, test it. You know, you probably want to get it watered. You're going to get water penetration down several inches, you know, and get it, this material down. They figure you need about a two inches of rain to effectively water it in. So, you know, that's
wow,
a pretty good amount of water.
That's a lot of water.
So if you could kind of think about how much water that is when you put it on, you know, so yeah, don't just go out there with your little sprinkler end attachment on your hose and give it a little, you know, misting, you know, and think you've done it good enough. You need to go over it two or three or four times that way to get it watered in good. Then you can always, you know, stick a pencil or a screwdriver or something into the ground and check your moisture penetration.
Not only will we have a nice and should be a beautiful wildflower season, that means weeds. And I tell you, driving home from Vegas yesterday, that whole area between the dam and Kingman, not generally known to be very lush, but I'll tell you what, there was more underlying green grass there, wiki up, that whole area. I mean, it's going to be a wildfire, hopefully not a wildfire season, but a
could
wild,
be that too.
A wildflower season,
yeah,
to
I
remember.
Think so.
Hope so.
1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. On the phones for your question as we start with Gary in Maricopa. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. I have a question about how to treat my navel orange tree. Are you there?
Yeah, we're listening.
Oh, very good. I had ants all around the base of it. So I thought, how can I get rid of the ants? And I read online, I took and blended orange peel into about a quart of vinegar and then poured it around it. Well, I think the vinegar was a little bit too harsh because 80% of the leaves fell off. So then I just soaked it in water for about a week just to flush the roots out. And is there anything else I need to do to help it come back in the spring?
No, not really. You know, don't overwater it. I mean, because if the tree has lost significant amount of leaves, it's not going to use very much water either. So, you know, if that's the mistake a lot of people make is by watering a plant a lot that has no or little foliage on it, you can eventually rot the roots because those leaves that are using the water and actually pulling the water up through the system of the plant are not there anymore. So water it good enough to flush out or leach out anything you think might have caused this, and then, you know, just let it go until it looks like, you know, kind of test the soil till the soil gets real dry again. That's really about all you can do. I wish there was a magic, so, you know, you could try maybe as it starts to warm up a little bit, maybe a little mild root stimulator or something that might help the roots pop some new hair roots, something like that. But I wouldn't do that until it actually needs some moisture again.
All right.
I do have one outstanding question, though.
Sure.
Greg, did it kill the ants?
Yes, it did.
Well, that's good.
They moved away. They moved their huge colony underground, I think.
And so maybe the lesson here is don't do it too close to a tree root.
Well, and know that anybody out there, ants generally are not harming the tree. The ants are there because there's some other reason, or the tree is providing them with moisture, or maybe there's another insect on the tree that's excreting moisture or sticky residue that the ants are harvesting. There's moisture at the base of the tree from water. There's shade and protection. But ants in and of themselves really don't feed on plants. So don't panic and go, you know, overboard on trying to control ants at the risk of the plant, because they're not hurting the plant.
It's just not very fun picking fruit and flip-flops when it's time for harvest.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, they're a nuisance. There's some issues with ants, but you know, the cure isn't necessarily worth the obviously end results in this case.
What would I'm trying to think. Come and Get It is a pretty good ant killer. We've used Amdro. We have a list on our website of all the different ant remedies that people from all over
that was like our number one response, wasn't it? The Come and Get It product, which is spinosad, is very safe, you know, to use. So you just be careful. Know that whatever you're using it, you're putting it around an edible plant. Diatomaceous earth would work. Putting something sticky around the trunk of the tree so they can't go up and down the trunk of the tree might help, at least keep them from going up and down the tree if that's one of the issues.